Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 189, nearing the big 200, by the way. Just kind of an aside, notice that we'll probably hit that, funnily enough, maybe sometime around a special game in May for the Vancouver Whitecaps. But till then, we're not going to look too far forward at much, in anything, but of course, there's some news and some moving, some happenings in Vancouver Whitecaps land. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gunge-Ruzic, joined by Sammy Rowan to help break all of that down. Since we last spoke, I mean, nothing really new. The Whitecaps haven't signed any flashy new DPs or anything like that, but there's a new face on the roster. We also know what the training camp rosters look like. Speaking of that, the training camp has started. So lots to dive into the Whitecaps. Again, like we mentioned, that counter towards the Tigris game slowly ticking up. Just as an aside, the other day someone was mentioned, like, are you going to go to Victoria? And I'm like, wait, Victoria, what's in Victoria next month? Oh yeah, like in a few weeks, you got to start planning to head out to that Tigris game. So it just shows you how quickly everything's coming in. But of course, before we dive in all that, Sam, how's it going this week?
Yeah, doing very, very well. Just over 3 weeks away, right? Which is just crazy. It does feel like a bit of a false start or a soft start to the season, because obviously the Whitecaps don't get their MLS schedule underway until the beginning of March. But nonetheless, yeah, some little things to dive into here. Alex, dare I say, we might be out of here in about an hour, which would be an uncharacteristically short Third Sub podcast. But there's still some good things to talk about, no doubt. As you mentioned, the Whitecaps are returning to Spain to that Marbella training camp center. Obviously, lots of teams either that have a midseason break or teams on this more North American, Scandinavian footballing schedule, conducting their preparations, and they have a couple exhibition matchups planned. We talk about this every year, but yeah, I don't know for the sickos out there like us, I don't know what the streaming is gonna be or the lack thereof. So it might be in Victoria when we truly see the Whitecaps under full broadcast with these new guys on the team. Depending on who's fit and 100% ready to go for the season. Ryan Gauld just joining the squad after he took part in the MLS-wide sort of season preview match media day, which was cool to see. And the Whitecaps bring some academy guys, some WFC players as well into the squad. So that was cool to see. We'll dive through some of the roster notes. Obviously, the addition of Fafa Pico, some rumors, some with smoke. Some perhaps less substantiated, all that good stuff. That's what happens this time of year, right? We're trying to figure out where all the puzzle pieces are going to fit in. And, I think for those two, Alex, expecting a big move, a flashy signing, something that's really going to fundamentally alter the prospects of this team going into 2024, we're still waiting on that move. So, stay by your phones. Anything could happen in any moment in that regard, but looking forward to diving into this episode 189.
Yeah, and I mean, look, to that last point, it's funny just because, again, with this weird, well, the Scandinavian, the winter calendar, it just feels like also sometimes the best time to make flashy moves are in the summer, as we see. And the Whitecaps just showed that last year, and they've shown it before with guys like Ryan Gauld, Andres Cubas. Those guys didn't come in, they didn't come in January. Those kind of guys, I think Cubas came in, what was April of 22. Gauld, of course, came in summer of 21. Adekugbe Larea last year coming in through the summer. Something where we're just seeing it. It's hard to make big moves in January. It's not to say you can't. The Whitecaps certainly trying. But yeah, just that's what's funny about this time of the year where you're preparing for such big games, Champions Cup, you know, the start of a season, you're trying to make transfers, and it's tough because there's so many moving parts, right? Heck, we'll dive into it. Like Richie Larea, there's so many moving parts there. We will update what we talked about last time, but then yeah, all of a sudden you read you know, The Athletic this morning, all of a sudden that Nottingham Forest getting charged you know, but in England, and then all of a sudden they might be getting a points deduction, and all of a sudden you realize, wait, that affects Larea. Like, there's just so many moving parts. But let's just start with what we do know, because you did let the cat slip out of the bag quietly there. The Whitecaps do have, you know, or maybe you let the gazelle slip out of the bag if we're going to go on nicknames. But the Caps do have a new signing, and that is veteran Haitian forward Fafa Pico. First broke the news was Hard Journalist. So, you know, Harjeet Johal, always, you know, friend of the show. So it's cool to see her break that news out of nowhere, because Fafa Pico is an interesting player. And then, of course, the Whitecaps made it official not long after. I mean, Sam, I'll just throw it to you first before we dive into, you know, some of what I saw in Fafa Pico, what I've seen from him watching games as well. But, I mean, first impression, what are your thoughts on Fafa Pico as a player? And then, more importantly, where did this kind of move register in the sense of what does it mean to the Whitecaps? What is it, and what could he bring to the Whitecaps? Because, look, at the end of the day, it's a free agent acquisition of a well-known name in MLS, but it, you know, as we said with Krylak, which made a lot of sense, does this Pico one tick as many boxes as that Krylak one did, for example?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because I think both of these moves probably make a lot of sense in isolation, and in both instances you're adding a veteran forward that has some ingredients you lack in your current squad, and you just bring some wiliness and experience that I think if you're trying to make a deeper playoff push, you want more of those guys in and around the team. The weird thing is they brought in both of them. That's what I think probably has, that was my perception at least of the reaction I was seeing, whether it's on Reddit, on Twitter, on our website, was sort of, I think personally, and I think most people out there understand the rationale behind both of these players. The question is why both of them? And then the question also is, I think a little bit, do the Whitecaps think this is the solution at the forward position? I think that's the concern a little bit is, oh, Fafa Pico and Demir Krylak are the solution to the third forward spot. Whereas I think most supporters out there are looking for that bigger name, that, you know, that flashier piece to add. So, you know, in terms of Fafa himself, I mean, first of all, just hearing from him at the training camp in Spain, just seems like a super great guy, super relaxed. I think, you know, already sounds like he's fitting into the team great. And so, you know, I think just in terms of the environment they're able to create with, you know, Demir obviously as well down in Salt Lake, did like so many tremendous things in the community and was just loved by everyone there. So, you know, they're adding really two first-class guys to the organization, which is never a bad thing. And you know, Fafa offers a pressing ability that Vanni Sartini, I'm sure watching tape, is going to be just, you know, making lots of hand gestures. He's going to love that. And I think that intensity, that ability to, you know, lead the line or provide a spark is really, really valuable. And there obviously was a time too where Fafa was like a, you know, I don't want to say an elite finisher in MLS, but like a very, 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 very solid finisher and chance creator, and those numbers have dropped off a little bit since. I don't think playing in Nashville was probably massively helpful, but yeah, I guess at this point you do wonder, you know, you like the experience, you like some of the individual traits. I think the question just is, you know, what does this say about a Levante Johnson? If you like Simon Betcher, and then why are you making these moves? I think that just at the forward position, it draws into question a little bit what the overall strategy is. So again, I think both these moves, you in isolation, you see why they make sense. But two of them together, you now wonder if that forward room is going to get too crowded, or if there's just not going to be room for that kind of elite addition that could really push this team over the top. Because I think that's the concern, right? Is that Pico and Krylak on their own doesn't push this team into MLS Cup title contender status, or at least it doesn't look like it at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it, right? Especially because, you know, there's a lot of chatter of, oh, like a potential DP level player coming in up front. You're kind of like, well, this is not that. And then,
but also, why do they sign two veteran depth guys if they're also planning on bringing in a DP? There's something incompatible going on there, or at least it feels like it.
Well, that's it. It's all of a sudden like, okay, if a DP attacker comes in, how are the minutes going to be allocated? But then also you hear that, you know, Vanni Sartini wants to play with more of a front three. So then you're like, all right, let's do some math. Gold, White, new attacking piece. So it's like, okay, I guess Pico and Krylak are purely going to be depth, which is fine. But then it's like, all right, well, you have to see that in practice. And, you know, it's just, it's a lot of, you know, how are the pieces going to jumble, right? I think that's the biggest thing. How are we going to judge this all in context? And, you know, what's all that going to mean? Because I think in isolation, yeah, like you mentioned, there's a lot to like about Fafa Pico and, you know, the attributes he brings, the fact that he's still such a good presser at this age, because you feel like if that was one thing that's going to go first, sometimes it can be your athletic ability, the ability to keep your legs going. It shows that he still has some gas in the tank. And I think there is some merit to know about the fact that he was playing for a Nashville team that struggled to generate a lot of offense. Yeah, it could be argued, well, Hany Mukhtar did a pretty good job of it, and he did a good job of setting up a lot of his teammates who didn't always do a great job of it. But look, watching a lot of Nashville games, like it's not really, you know, at times it wasn't the easiest environment for forwards to thrive in. I think the two things I saw were, if you're like a Jacob Schaffelberg and you're really good at making, you know, you developed a lot this year in making those off ball runs, he was someone who thrived as a non-Hany Mukhtar name, of course. And then when he came in later, Sam Surridge thrived just because he's kind of a more of a big number nine that can get on the end of crosses. If you weren't either of those two things, like off ball running or a guy who could just get in the box and get headers, you were kind of struggling. And Fafa Pico kind of fits that mold because, yes, he's a very quick guy, and you're like, oh, he should be great at making runs off the ball. He's more someone who likes to, you know, you can start to kind of see it with the numbers. You kind of see it with the eye test. Well, like, he likes to get the ball and dribble a bit more and kind of make things happen that way. He's like that, especially, you know, back in the Union in his day when he was really tearing it up a few years ago. So it kind of wasn't really room for someone like him at Nashville. But then you wonder, okay, with the Whitecaps, obviously the role is going to be for Ryan Gold to do a lot of that sort of ball carrying. So will Pico be able to do that? That's a fair question to have, that, you know, Pico likes to get in on the dribble at times. But ultimately it just felt like, again, for Nashville, for a striker of his profile, it didn't really always fit there either. So that's also something where, yeah, he didn't score too many goals, 5 goals, I think, in MLS. And it was like a couple more in all competitions. But, you know, at the end of the day, you wonder what he could do in a system that suits him more. Question is, does Vancouver system suit him? The pressing, he absolutely fits in and can lead from the front. But it'll be interesting to see if he can evolve. Just because someone like Brian White is, you know, a lot like that final action, final box type of finisher. Of course, we know Brian White is great with this hold-up play. But perhaps that's also the tweak that Vanny is making with the system, where he goes to a front three. Gold is kind of the carrier chance creator. White's kind of the hold up and finish. This third name, we have to see what the profile ends up looking. Maybe that profile ends up being more of a younger premium version of Pico, and then all of a sudden pieces kind of all fall in, because then Krylak's a bit more of the Gold backup, and then you know, up front, maybe there's a different name we're not considering that can end up being more of a White backup, or someone that's already in the system, right?
So the other thing I think about in relation to these two additions is two Whitecaps midfielders who the knock-on effect of these acquisitions maybe has some impact, especially given the way Vanny's talking about moving things tactically. And those guys are Pedro Vite and Alessandro Schopf, because these are your more attacking, chance-creating, advanced midfield types. And if you're going with three forwards, you know, I think you have to be anticipating that Ali Ahmed's going to have a big season. Andres Kubas is going to be a day-to-day starter. Maybe Seb Berhalter is pushing for a bigger role. The question then is, how did those two fit in? And yeah, it seems like, you know, bringing in these veterans up front, talking about wanting to go with three attackers, I think it, you know, it certainly at least draws into question, I think in particular Schopf, because of the the age and the profile. You just kind of wonder what the fit is going to be. And, you know, and also then for Pedro, does he really more permanently move into a bit more of a box to box, you know, central midfielder type, because there's probably going to be less room up front for him this season.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly it too. Like, and then all of a sudden, where does Ahmed fall into that? Where does everything, like, there's just all these questions. But then I guess, you know, then all of a sudden you could also wonder, does a back three end up even happening? Because you could fit them all in if you go back to a four, but are they going to go back to a four? It doesn't look like it.
I would like them to go old school 4-3-3, I think.
Or like a 4-3-2-1. But yeah. Then I'd say to do that, you'd need the right center backs. And we haven't heard, like we said last week, it's not easy to find the right profile, let alone, you know, have the right profile available. So it's like,
it's a challenge.
So that's why it's going to be very interesting to kind of marry what we're seeing in terms of acquisitions, what we're hearing in terms of, you know, Vanny and Axel and what they're sharing their plans are and what they've been going after. And then also kind of putting all that together and piecing together, like, oh, you want to play three attackers. You need to fit in guys like Vitae Ahmed back four, but then, you know, you go back to square one where, well, then what we're not seeing is, you know, an influx of center backs who could potentially play that back four, or they're potentially, again, like, will they rely on someone like, you know, on what they have to fill in, right? Like, it's all sorts of questions. And I guess, yeah, that's where we're kind of at now, where it's that awkward period of they're trying to make the signings to obviously put this vision together. Since the camp is in Marbella, we're not really seeing what's kind of being tried out. Like, are they experimenting with back fours? Are they, you know, going more back three? Are we seeing some new positions for guys? So yeah, that's just adds to the intrigue of maybe one thing to keep an eye out if they do streams is to keep an eye out on some of those questions. Because yeah, sitting here, us in Vancouver, all of a sudden you kind of realize that there is a few missing pieces, like the sense that all of a sudden if you go 4-3-3, having additions like Krylak and Pico can make sense, especially because Krylak could double as one of the eights almost. You feel like, and all of a sudden, okay, it's not as crowded up front. Whereas, of course, if they kept the two forwards, which you know they're not, it's extremely crowded with all the names they brought in, versus, okay, they're planning to play three up front. But then all of a sudden, you're like, aren't there a bunch of midfielders, right? Like, you're talking, if you're playing a double pivot, Kubas, Vitae, Ahmed, Berhalter, Schopf. Like, yeah, okay, Quebec. Okay, Berhalter is the easy one to be benched for Kubas, but all of a sudden, who the heck plays beside Kubas? You can make compelling arguments for all three. So yeah, like you mentioned, it just, you know, we're gonna have to see how this all adds up as they finalize their signings too, because that's also the big thing of, you know, I imagine things would be different if Larea was over the line, which, you know, of course, there's still waiting for a final update on what's going to go on there, right? And that all kind of just leads to this chain reaction.
Yeah, so I think to circle back and summarize, my big picture takeaway from these two moves together is just that while they both make sense in isolation, together they create as many new questions as they provide answers to problems the Whitecaps had last season, right? I don't think we sat after a lot of matches here recording podcasts going, man, they really, you know, they should have scored more goals. Obviously, there's the days where there's missed opportunities and, you know, when things just don't go your way, when the XG gods aren't in your favor. But fundamentally, that wasn't the issue with this team last season, right? They just needed to be a little bit more consistent defensively, you know, as I've talked about, average instead of mediocre. And also, I think, you know, I mean, you figure out your road woes a little bit sooner in the season, that probably would have helped as well. And maybe Pico and Krylak provide a little of that, you know, those crucial late goals to keep you in games or to get you over the line. But yeah, not only does this not fully address, I think, some of the issues the Whitecaps had and the problems you're trying to overcome this offseason, but it also creates some weird side questions of its own that I think, as you said, we're only going to see once we get a stream or we're watching the Whitecaps over in Langford here in February.
Yeah, exactly. So until then, Pico, like it's going to be a fun signing. He can be a fun player on his day. Good personality, adding a bit more veteran experience. Which again, you can never have too much of, I suppose. The only question is, well, is that veteran experience you're providing coming at cost of actual production?
Well,
But
I think, you know, no offense intended, but better this than another year of Rusty, right? As much as he's an absolute club legend, but at this point, you still, if you're going to have those veteran impact guys, you want someone who can actually contribute and provide a profile that you think you need. So, you know, I like it in that sense. And 400, 500K is probably better spent on a Fafá Pico than somewhere else.
well, that's it. You're bringing in veterans, but also veterans, who've experienced different environments and, different situations, and bring that ML that vaunted MLS experience that you always hear. I remember 2019 when the Whitecaps had no MLS experience. Like, now you're getting that. It's just okay. Like, what does the rest of the roster build look like? But I guess on that note, let's just move on to the next talking point, which is,
I will just note, as I wanted to check really quick, Fafá was making 650K in Nashville.
so yeah, we'll have to see, of course, in around May what he comes in at. Ditto with Krylak, who's making a similar amount. You have to imagine it's surely, like, at the very least, like you mentioned, like a Russell Tybert-esque, which was around 300K last year for each, which I think is where that number kind of makes sense. Because even Junior Hoilett on a short-term deal came around, what was it, like 150K? And he signed in September, so you kind of prorate that. That's probably around 300, 400K. That would make sense, right? Like, Junior Hoilett doesn't appear to be back. Russell Tybert doesn't appear to be back. Pico and Krylak ultimately fill their salary spots, even if they're not filling like for like the same roster spots. Like, it all kind of adds up in that sense. So, very important to know. We'll actually have to see if that ends up being the case. They maybe had to pay a bit more, but at the end of the day, MLS free agents, I think that would track on that regard. But yeah, like we mentioned, one thing that the Whitecaps are keeping an eye on, but genuinely, all the control is out of their hands, is the Richie Larea situation. I guess we'll just issue some updates since we last talked about it, because JJ Adams then published an article on top of what he reported on Twitter, which of course was all that was out when we last spoke about it. So he issued an update with some quotes from Axel Schuster, which were very interesting. Then Tom Bogert also added some important clarity on top of that. But before we do, we had a comment from last week, so we'll just go from there. It was from the Positive Whitecaps Troll, which is a hilarious name, by the way. I love that. And he just mentioned under our last podcast, because we mentioned in the last episode that a big potential holdup was the fact that the Whitecaps might not have been sure on if Larea should be a DP or not. He mentioned his comment verbatim. I don't think it's making Larea DP itself that's the issue. There are two types: the one you can buy down to eventually add another DP, and the ones who are, of course, above the tammable threshold. The NFV demands would make him the latter, and I don't think he's that kind of DP. 100%. We agree wholeheartedly with the comments. So, of course, thanks for sending in. And it's important to clarify just that, at the end of the day, Larea could come in as a DP, and that was always kind of the original confusion when the Athletic reported it last summer, where they're like, the Whitecaps want to make Larea a DP, and everyone's kind of like, look, in with these new MLS rules, you can pay him 900K and he's a DP. It's just you then take Tam and buy him down so he meets a certain threshold. So that is important to note in that whole discussion. It's something that certainly we forgot to mention, and we'll appreciate you reaching out and clarifying on that regard. But then what was also interesting that we then got an update, and Sam, I'll throw it to you. That update is, very important, just in terms of all of a sudden it takes a lot of the pressure off the Whitecaps, because ultimately, as we did not no one realized at the time, they kind of don't have that much control over the situation, and a weird MLS rule is the big reason why.
Oh yeah, so I'll do my best here because I'll never confess to fully understanding MLS contract, salary spot regulations, all that stuff. But what appears to be going on, based on Axel Schuster's comments through JJ Adams, based on Tom Bogert's reporting, based on everything we've seen since our last podcast, which was 10 days ago, is that yeah, he you know Richie would have prospectively fit into that sort of buy downable DP area But the issue is, because he's considered a, in air quotes, I'm going to use air quotes because I don't even understand really how this is possible, but a free agent via MLS standards, the Whitecaps can't sign him in that capacity. Is that, like, he's not allowed per league rules to occupy a designated player spot?
Well, basically, the way I see it, the max offer as an MLS free agent is that DP buy downable spot. It's 1.7 million. The problem is, as we know, and this is where the headache is, if the Whitecaps were to buy him, the fee then would be added, and then he would push that threshold.
Right. So the issue is that together with his salary and his fee together would go substantially over that, one would think, or certainly what Nottingham Forest is asking for at the moment would be substantially over that. And therefore, even if the Whitecaps were happy with those financial terms, they were willing to pay that much for the player and for the contract, they're not permitted to do it as per league rules. So as you said, Alex, it's one of those things where really Axel Schuster can have a call with Nottingham Forest and can say, listen, in an alternate universe where we're, you know, a championship side in England, we might agree to these terms, but because we're in MLS, we can't accept. So you're going to have to, the only way we can accept is if you lower your demand. So in that sense, with these things that are going on with Nottingham Forest in terms of possible points deduction, possible sanctions, we'll have to see, does it light a fire under Forest to liquidate some of their players? Or, you know, if the points deduction is big enough, does it make them go, eh, we might need Richie Larea next season when we're in the championship? Those are both legitimate possibilities. But really, it's up to Forest at this point. Do they, you know, and this goes beyond Richie, right? Like they have a bloated squad, tons of loanees. It's a complete mess. They've had so many different managers. I think as an organization, as a club, they're going to have to decide, are that, do we liquidate some of this stuff and clean up our house? Or do we just ride this thing to the very end? And obviously for the Whitecaps, I think they would prefer the first option if Nottingham chose to do it, but the clock is ticking.
Yeah, and I'll hop in an issue. They didn't have that many managers, to be fair. I think Steve Cooper was Larea's manager in the championship, and he managed to stay for a year and a half, but then he got fired. He is popular. They might have had an intern, but now Nuno is in after his stint in Saudi. So definitely just a weird carousel that of all names they would decide to go to.
The club's not had, you know, despite managing to stay up, they've just not had much continuity, it feels like, for the last like 5-6 years. It's just honestly impressive the way they managed to gain promotion and the way they managed to stay up last season. But it's been a
reckless. It's been very reckless. But yeah, all that to say, I think the Coles notes of this, as far as I understand it as well, which is important to remember, the Whitecaps cannot, this is like, they cannot offer Richie Larea over the over, I think, 1.7 million. So of course they've offered that. From what it sounds like, Axel said, sounds like the dialogue's been positive. Richie Larea is open to that number. Like, it's not like he's, you know, like, oh, that number has to be 2 mil or more. Like, he's been open to that number. Then the only problem is the Whitecaps take the number which he would come in at, which could technically be buy downable if he were a free agent. But then they have to go to Forest and negotiate a fee. And then the fee that Forest wants on top of what they, you know, the figure that Larea could come in at, pushes him over to be a DP threshold. And the only problem is with that is the Whitecaps cannot then go, okay, fine, we'll make him a DP. They do not have that choice. Basically, due to MLS rules that have him listed as a free agent, because I guess he has the 5 years of service and he is, I guess, out of an MLS contract. And they count that, but it's like the same reason that Toronto had to reacquire his, you know, when he came back in the league, they had to reacquire his rights or whatever it was. He, for whatever reason, is listed as an out of contract MLS player and is held to these rules. So it's right now we're a choice where the Whitecaps physically cannot make him a true DP unless Forest lowers their demands. Of course, the Whitecaps still could make him a DP, like we mentioned, you know, like the positive Whitecaps fan mentioned earlier. like he can still come in. They could make him a DP, right? They just buy him at that cost. We assume they're likely going to buy him down just so they can make full use of their U22 spots, or, you know, maybe even just to open up room for another full DP. But they just cannot find a line that works for both. So really, it's up to Forrest to lower what they want, because as it stands, the Whitecaps cannot do more than they have. And yeah, it's just a funny situation, because ultimately I get from Forrest, like, get your money, right? Like, if you want your money and you have a player, like, get it. But also at the same time, it's frustrating because it impacts, I think most importantly, impacts the player. I think it's something where if you're doing this, player's still playing for your club, like, fine. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's your player. You want to get your money for it. But the fact that Larrea is not even really in the plans, he's kind of stuck in a limbo where he can't be in a preseason with an MLS team. Like, you're just hurting the player. And I think that's where hopefully with Forrest, they can come to an agreement where it just ends best for the player. Because I think that's going to be the big worry, that, okay, they maybe they get a points deduction. They want to keep him. But then I'd say just play him in your Premier League games if you're going to, you know, like, it's something where you don't want to hold on to him. He doesn't play and his next competitive game is August July now when the championship kicks off, because you wanted that. You want him to be playing whatever the best solution is. So hopefully something changes, but just important to update for those being like, oh, the Whitecaps weren't able to bring Richie Larrea back. From what everything's indicating, they've done as much as they can within the very weird MLS rules, which again, this is just like also from MLS's perspective. Like, I know the rules are all complicated and you can't just change it like that, but like, this is a reason to maybe go and look at some of these rules, because this is the Whitecaps trying to retain one of the top players at his position in the league, a domestic. These are the kinds of players you want in the league, and they're physically not able to. This is also something for MLS where I think the easy solution is stop adding the transfer fees to the salary hit. Like, okay, have a salary cap, fine, but there's no reason why the transfer fees should add up. If you want to pay $20 million for a talent, you want to pay $30 million, why? You know, if it's a young talent, I think that if you do that sort of rule, you could attack some premium young talent from South America, for example, who might not make DP level salaries, but they're going to cost a lot of money. And then you can, like, it just, I think it would make a lot of sense. And I think it's ridiculous that, yeah, okay, for some players, you're going to pay a lot of money and they're going to be DPs, but it really hurts you in scenarios like this where you already have some DPs on the roster.
Well, and it seems like a weird thing too, where players with MLS experience and, you know, substantial playing time in MLS, almost it's way more convoluted, right? Like, making those movements within the league involves all these additional challenges, when really you would think that, you know, bringing players from outside would be more challenging, and moving within, they're already, you know, an MLS player, we just have to move them to a separate team. But it ends up being the other way around. So I think you're right. This is something that needs to be looked at. And also I think at this point, adding the transfer fee made sense in like MLS 1.0 and 2.0, but we've sort of broken contain at this point. And we've seen the things that LAFC, Inter Miami, LA Galaxy are doing, you know, to circumvent some of this stuff. And it might be time to just to make some structural changes. I think a lot of people were surprised that there wasn't more substantive done going into this season, right? Whether that was the fourth designated player spot, just greater upgrades to roster rules. On a completely non-important note, I think the thing I wanted to circle back on was, I probably saw this on Twitter or something, but yeah, Nottingham Forest since 2017, they've had 11 managers in that period of time. So to be fair, Steve Cooper, you're right.
He did have a pretty good two-year run,
but other than that, absolute shambles. So I think it just speaks to the overall dysfunction of the team that the Whitecaps are trying to deal with at the moment. It's, you know, if Steve Cooper was their best period of time, then and that didn't end on great terms, then I think, you know, there's a lot of chaos going on in the Midlands. So we'll continue to track that. We'll see what happens. I have to say, Alex, I don't know about you, but at this point, do you think Richie Larrea is wearing a Whitecap shirt on opening day against Charlotte? I'm gonna go ahead and say no, because I just don't think it'll be done by then, even if the Whitecaps are able to acquire his services here in the coming months. Important to note, I mean, MLS, what their roster flexibility, you can still make moves up until April, I think, right? But but from Nottingham's perspective, they might be looking to make moves a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I just hope whatever it is, he's wearing a jersey in March, be it Forests or Whitecaps or someone in MLS, just because I would hate to see a player of his ilk, especially with something where, you know, in March, for example, he could very well be starting for the Canadian men's national team in their must-win Copa America qualifier against Trinidad and Tobago, because he's been in excellent form. You don't want, you know, a player like that to hurt possibilities like that, or, you know, his future at a club just because of a weird rule limbo. And look, that's something for MLS to consider, because it's something for the league as well. Like I mentioned, just the transfer fees, like another point as well. Yeah, it's been great that Miami's been able to get in all this talent, but it's funny that guys like Busquets, Alba, Suarez, what is the one thing they all had in common? They're all free agents. And free agents are great. You can get a lot of free agents. But, man, like there's someone like Paulo Dybala apparently is out there. He has a release clause of, what is it, like $13 million for teams to offer? Like, yeah, okay, you could argue it's bad for the league if you remove all the rules and a team like Miami then goes and offers a Dybala. But at the end of the day, teams are willing to spend. I bet you some of the other owners, if given the possibility, they might try to look at those sorts of signings. Because I think the one thing with these rules, 1.7 million or whatever the TAM threshold is pretty high. Like that's competitive to earn some pretty good players. But the only thing is with the transfer fee, it gets complicated. But there, you can get good free agents for 1.7 million. You've seen it again. Hugo Lloris as well. Like someone who comes in and signs. Like you can get good free agents, but I think again that next step is if you can just fix the transfer fees, I think it would really help MLS be more of a player in terms of acquiring some of these pieces. And then again, if you're able to acquire more premium talent like that, it'll also help you sell more and could help on that. But look, that's another rant for another day. But I think it's really clear in a case like this. But I guess on that note, talking about a potential player sale. This was just a bit of an interesting one this morning. Sam on good old, you know, Twitter, as I'm going to continue to call it. There are rumors that Ryan Raposo is linked to China. So supposedly, according to the report, he could head to a Chinese super club. He could earn citizenship or earn a passport and end up playing for the Chinese national team. So, I mean, first off, what to make of this report? And all of a sudden, could this be a worry that maybe, you know, the Whitecaps could lose some faces before the season and take a hit, depth wise, where they're still not done making moves? And fullback, for example, with no Richie Larea in the building right now, your best 11, your projected fullbacks, it's Ryan Raposo and Sam Adekugbe. So that'd be a huge, huge blow to lose. Someone like Raposo had a great season last year.
I think that's what's so interesting, right? Is that if Richie was signed, sealed, and delivered, you're maybe not quite so concerned about this. But because Richie's out there waiting for Nottingham to do something, Raposo is your prospective starter at that position, depending on what formation you play. Obviously, we've seen China employ this strategy with other sports too, where like in their team in the KHL, where if you play there, you have the opportunity maybe to naturalize or whatever and gain citizenship and then play for the Chinese national team. So this is a strategy they employ in multiple sports. And it sounds like, Alex, we were chatting before the show and, you know, this is not completely wild or completely out of the blue. It seems like there's at least some validity. This is something that theoretically could happen. But I think the question for me is, would Ryan Raposo, especially provided Richie Larea not being around, does he want to give up this opportunity in Vancouver to chase something else that, you know, involves some national team football maybe, but might, involve, I don't want to explicitly call it a sacrifice on the league side, but I think he's in a good situation here in Vancouver. And the last two seasons, he's taken significant steps forward. Vanni Sartini really likes his fullback, wingback, former number 10. So it's an ideal fit in that respect. He'd also, you know, we were talking about this as well before the show. This is his final MLS generation Adidas. I almost forgot the program, but this is his final add-on option year of generation Adidas. So he'll be a full-blown MLS free agent. You know, if he goes and has a, call it a, we use this a lot, but call it like a 5-5 season, right? You know, if he's able to do something like that, he would be a valuable free agent commodity for MLS teams. So yeah, he's got to consider all these factors, whether it's national team football, the role he could get in MLS, the money as well. You know, I mean, I don't think China is offering the kind of wages they were maybe 5-10 years ago, but there's still some money there. So it'd be interesting to track. I think what's from a specific Vancouver Whitecaps perspective, it does point again to I don't want to say that this team is thin, because I think they have depth at certain positions, but yeah, there's, you know, all of a sudden you take away one or two players at key position, and it's like, whoa, who's going to play fullback? Is the answer to that Sebastian Berhalter and Levante Johnson? I mean, it certainly could be, but it's crazy that that's something we, you know, we're 3 weeks away from the first meaningful first team football. And yeah, you know, Levante Johnson and Seb Berhalter could be your right wing back options.
Yeah, it's such an interesting rumor. I mean, look, for what it's worth, Raposo is eligible to, you know, potentially represent China. For what it's worth, it's not the first time I've heard a rumor like this that, you know, China has been interested in his services. Of course, it's never, you know, it's been a rumor. It's never been full-blown serious to that point, at least from what I've heard. But it is just something where this is something to consider. Like you mentioned, he is free agent at the end of the year. It could be something as well from like a Chinese club's perspective. Like, you're not trying to acquire someone with the 4 years on their contract. This is someone where they are a free agent. You know, they could be approached to make a move because they'd have the leverage. So I think what this is from the Whitecaps perspective, again, it's like the Gall rumors. It's like the Kubas rumors. They're there, and of course they make sense for why they would happen. But what this does for the Whitecaps is it shows that, okay, maybe it could be worth looking at a longer term deal for a Raposo, especially if you're not able to get your hands on a Larea, you know, or from other perspectives. Like, it just makes you realize, like, this is the kind of asset you're dealing with. Maybe if you fear you're going to lose him, of course you could trade him. I you know, I think based on what he showed last year, I think he's someone you absolutely want to keep, just because what was nice with him last year is it showed he can be a starter, but also when the big guns came in and he lost his spot, he played even better and kind of almost won his spot back. And I think you want guys like that on a team like this, where you're trying to compete, you're in multiple competitions, you're trying to build squad depth. You want guys that are going to be willing to battle. But those are all things that the Whitecaps have to consider, especially that he's in the final year of this deal. Like, there's no more options years. There's no more kicking it down the road. And I think this interest, maybe it could also serve kind of as a warning of, oh yeah, like, there is going to be interest for him, especially if, you know, from a club in China's perspective too. Like, you're getting a good player, and you're also getting one where that's marketability. The fact that he could be Chinese eligible, you know, it would make a lot of sense, and I'm sure they'd throw good money to make that happen. So if you're the Whitecaps and he's someone that of value, like, if this is a different scenario, like, if this is, you know, maybe a different player in this case, we'd be like, all right, take the deal and run. But for someone like Raposo that clearly has value to the Whitecaps at the fullback position, domestic, you know, he's still young and improving at a position that he, you know, didn't take up all that long ago. Definitely a reason to want to keep him around. So it'll be just interesting to see how they respond. Like, will they be able, maybe will this maybe push them to try to get an extension out of the way early into the season or something like that. That's kind of how I feel, where, yeah, it's kind of like the Golden Kubas, where given the scenarios they're in, there's interest. It's just, okay, how do the Whitecaps manage this and avoid a situation where all of a sudden you're losing him as a free agent, you know, at the end of the year? Because I think at the end of the day, that's the worst case scenario no matter what, because it's like, okay, if you're resigned to lose him, at least get your money for him, right? And you don't want to kind of kick it down the road and all of a sudden you're left with losing guys like Raposo, or, of course, like we mentioned last episode, losing a Gold for free. You don't want those sorts of scenarios.
You know, it's funny, as you talk about this stuff, it makes me think maybe this is showing, you know, just how long we've been following this team. But one thing that runs through my head is, gee, it's kind of nice that the Vancouver Whitecaps have players that other teams genuinely are pursuing and you know, really want to try to acquire their services, that there's these kinds of rumors going on, right? I mean, you know, like you saw the, I think, pretty much completely unsubstantiated, seemed like fan count adjacent, but, you know, you have Ryan Gauld to Rangers things popping up on Twitter. It's nice that the Whitecaps are...
Kubas.
Exactly. It's nice you have, you know, Rangers, Boca Juniors, Sporting, these kinds of clubs interested in Vancouver Whitecaps players. You know, it feels like the team and the league, it's come a long way from where things started out. So that just on a big picture level, I think that's good news rather than bad news. And as you said, Alex, I think makes you think about, hey, you know, locking these guys up, especially the ones on the younger side, someone like a Raposo that's has a lot of good football in front of them still, you know, started pretty young here in Vancouver. So I think there's still more there to be had. Okay, a couple training camp roster news and notes. Something kind of out of the blue, something I didn't necessarily expect, but also makes quite a bit of sense, is Thomas Asahl with the squad for camp. I'm assuming this is something where, as he recovers from injury, he's just looking for an opportunity to, you know, dust the cobwebs off, sharpen himself, maybe possibly to sign with the Canadian Premier League team or something like that. But it's a good opportunity. He's part of the Whitecaps family. It's kind of, I think, Axel Schuster backing up his idea of sometimes players, their moment with the club will come and go, but they want these players to do well beyond their time in Vancouver. So that was cool to see, and hope Thomas is doing well and feeling 100% fit and healthy. And then the other one, Alex, which is, an interesting sort of Canadian prospect, U Sports alum, lots of interesting, you know, the Derek Cornelius club of former strikers turned center backs. So another interesting camp invitee that, maybe you can speak to a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just to start, I mean, for Hassal, it seems like a win-win opportunity, because for the Whitecaps, they're going to Spain for 3 weeks. It might not make sense to call up like the U19 goalkeeper. If I'm not mistaken, I could have this completely wrong. All those teams that are in the like MLS Next, you know, all those U17, U15, they're all still in season, because it's more of a, like, you know, fall to spring season. So why disrupt a kid also who might be in school or something like that? Because, of course, you have your first team keepers in Bomer, Anchor, and Takaoka, but you want a fourth. You know, a lot of your options are either in school or playing like that. Bringing in like someone like Casal to have that fourth keeper for training options, you know, he's there. And it's a win-win for him, because who knows, maybe he impresses, he earns an MLS contract, and he's back in the system as an ex-pro or, you know, a first-team backup. Or he gets his fitness up ahead of some CPL teams starting preseason next month, right? So I think it's cool to see just for Hassal, and hopefully you can use this to his advantage. And, you know, if he ends up back in the CPL, that this gives him kind of the chance to get fresh, because he's coming off of an injury as well, so it gives him those extra reps that he'll need. Or he ends up back with the Whitecaps in some sort of solution. I think the CPL option seems more likely, but you never know with these kinds of stories. So it's a cool one. As for Halbouni, it's a bit of a fun name, just because that's such a great story. Like, he was playing in League One Ontario and got converted into a center back after being a prolific striker. Ends up being quite good at center back. Werder Bremen comes in and signs him, and he plays a bunch for their second team. Doesn't break through to the first team. He trained with the first team a bit, I think. Then he goes to Magdeburg in Germany, the second division. But then there, he just doesn't really get a chance to play. He made his debut for Syria. I'm not sure if it's in a fully official capacity, but he made his debut for Syria. But then he blew out his knee on his Syrian debut. And then he's been out since then. So he's only returning from an injury. But he's a fun profile, just because he's really technical on the ball as a former like attacker 10. So he's got good ball playing skills. I think for Vancouver, those are something that they're always interested in central defenders. He's also good in the air because of that. Of course, we'll have to see, because he's coming off a knee injury. Will he retrain some of that retain some of that aerial prowess, because hey, like we mentioned, the Whitecaps certainly can't be sniffing up their names at anyone who's good in the air and good on the ball, which Hal Bunia, you know, pre-injury certainly had a lot of those attributes. It was just for him. He was still young. Consistency, breaking through to a club like Werder Bremen in the Bundesliga, or even in the second Bundesliga, which is a very competitive league. He wasn't able to put that all together, but maybe it could make sense, especially post-injury. He starts in next pro, gets his speed back, especially that he has all the attributes we're saying the team needs to look at. And yeah, for what it's worth, I had a chance to interview him, I think, 2 years ago. He's good personality. You know, a guy really wants to work hard and, you know, make that next step. I just thought it was an interesting name to see. And of course, a lot of this depends on how he's looking post-knee injury and everything, but could be a fun name to take a bit of a punt on.
Well, as you just pointed out, Alex, this is like the prototypical, this is exactly what the MLS Next Pro team is for, right? These guys that are looking for that opportunity, and you think, you know, feasibly has the talent to, I don't think it's crazy to say he has the talent that could he contribute at the MLS level at some point. It certainly that possibility is there, but, you know, through this training camp, if he impresses enough at training camp that you want to sign him onto Next Pro or to, you know, or some kind of combo deal, you have that flexibility to sort of work him through your system. It's going to be interesting. That's, you know, one of the reasons I would really hope to see some kind of streaming option for some of these exhibition matchups, guys like that, to see them in a Whitecap shirt, how they might fit in, I think would be very, very interesting. Okay, the last one in terms of the, I guess, the significant news and notes, I will add as well that, you know, a lot of those guys that the Vancouver Whitecaps signed on and around deadline day to the MLS Next Pro squad that we haven't seen anything from yet, they're all at camp, as well as the MLS Super Draft picks. That's Fleurieu, Chateau, and Goldthorpe. Is that, hopefully I'm getting that correct. Yeah, so those two guys we talked about on the last show, they're there as well. But one guy that we heard from in some of the media stuff that I just listened to before the show, 17-year-old academy product, midfielder, Javon Badwal. You know, always cool when the Whitecaps bring up a couple of young guys to take part in first team camp. Yeah, you know, young guy just getting his feet wet, but a lot of confidence, I think, you know, was asked what his goals and ambitions were. And first thing was, I want to make a first team appearance. I want to make a first team debut. That's kind of the big goal set out in his mind, and talked about, you know, you just had, I think, something like 405 minutes over the course of 8 appearances in MLS Next Pro last season. So they just started to kind of drop him into the Next Pro ranks, coming up from that U19 system. He's a dual citizen as well, India and Canada. So, you know, again, just 17 years old. So a long ways to go in the development pipeline, but they've got, you know, some U20 stuff coming up. Is that Gold Cup for the U20s? Or there's some kind of CONCACAF competition coming up?
The U20 CONCACAF championships this year. He represented the U17s at last year's U17 championship. With that, they qualified for the U17 World Cup, where he went and had a very good tournament, all things considered, considering Canada's struggles. It was really excellent against Spain in the opening game, actually, which was impressive because Spain has a couple guys already who had played for Barcelona, like Marc Guiu, like first team debut and scored for Barcelona. So like that's the level of team they're up against, and Badwal completely looked the level. And yeah, so I think with Badwal, he's someone to watch, especially because the Whitecaps don't have that much midfield depth in their system. Like, we kind of saw it last year where Vasco Fry left. Of course, Gio Aguilar, they kind of just, you know, let go because he got older. There wasn't a whole lot in the system. Of course, they signed Malcolm Simmons, who's someone to watch this year, and maybe we end up seeing a lot of a pivot of, like, Simmons and Badwal, which would be fascinating given their stories and, you know, what they bring. Simmons, of course, having had that chance in Benfica's academy, but Badwal, he's a fun player to watch. Like, for his age, what really impressed me watching him for Canada in the brief glimpses I was able to get at Next Pro is his ball retention is really high. Like, he just knows how to make the right pass, the simple pass, but he's also, like, he's a sharp passer. He can play the switch, he can break lines. Like, he's not just a you know, play simple passes to keep possession. He can also be a bit adventurous, a bit, you know, he has that range, and then he's also good at dribbling. Like, he's good at making little, like, he's not going to be someone where I'm like the flare dribble, but he knows how to, you know, take guys 1v1, make a feint, open up a passing lane. Like, he's just a really good on the ball player. Of course, at his age, the big things are going to be, okay, the defensive side of the game, a lot of the off-ball movement. But there's just those two areas of his game were really mature. Sometimes we see it where 17-year-olds, they might be, you know, very strong on the ball in some regards, but they maybe are a bit sloppy in possession, or sometimes they try to take guys on too much just because they can. Whereas I just thought there was a lot of maturity and polish in his game already. So for a Whitecaps 2 team that needed a lot of midfield depth, he's someone I've really got my eye on. It's exciting that he gets a chance with the first team.
Yeah, I just wanted to give him a shout out, first of all, because he was at camp and he's one of the youngest guys there, but also because probably in terms of our sort of prospect scouting side of the podcast and even on the written side, it tends to focus on a lot of MLS Next Pro data. We sort of focus on guys that are having success at that level. So it does leave out some of these guys who, you know, 400 minutes in Next Pro is not really enough to get too much of a picture. So we didn't really feature him a lot last year, but definitely someone to watch. And it's interesting the way you describe his profile, Alex, because two guys that he shouted out that had really helped him at camp this season were Seb Berhalter and JC Ngondo. And it, based on those attributes, that sounds like a bit of a mesh of those two players. So, you know, especially Seb, who's kind of been through this academy, you know, growing up in the MLS system, and Ngondo, that's, you know, bounced around, had a variety of experience. I think two guys that they're great to learn from, and hopefully this is a good spark for him to do well for Canada, do well Next Pro, and then, you know, maybe in a couple seasons we'll see him at the first team level.
Yeah, hopefully, just because, yeah, it was exciting to see at the U17 level, you know, for Canada, and even within the Whitecap system. And yeah, great to, it's always great to see youngsters get their chance. And all of a sudden, between him and, you know, some of the other names like a Mikhail Gerasimenkov at fullback, you know, some fun names to keep an eye on there as guys who could, you know, continue to progress. Of course, there's a lot of interesting names on that second team, Coupland, you know, Joshua in Kadala. So yeah, like, excited to see what the second team, of course, Malcolm Simmons, who I just, you know, mentioned a few minutes ago. So yeah, just always cool to see these youngsters get an opportunity. Hopefully he makes the most of it and uses it to have a strong Next Pro season. And hopefully if he does have a strong Next Pro season, maybe we see him get 12 minutes against a CPL team in a Canadian championship or a cup of coffee in a League's Cup game. Because at the end of the day, that's what you want to push these guys, get them that experience against pro, is at the Next Pro level, and turn that into more competitive opportunities higher up the line, because he's got the potential to do so. So now hopefully you can continue to harness it, because I've liked a lot of what I've seen. Because yeah, a lot at this age, you see a lot of flashy players who, again, especially with how youth development is now, sometimes it isn't so much about players being skilled enough at 17, 18 anymore. Like, the, you know, there's a lot of young technical players coming up, but it's little things about how do you read the game? What do you do on the ball? How your maturity about his game, and I don't know, just some of the attributes at 17. Hopefully he gets a chance to play in preseason. I'd encourage to kind of watch out for those things. That's, again, really what stood out for me. And sometimes you don't always see that at that age group. Sometimes it takes time. You even see with players who are in pro, who are like playing in MLS, who are young, you know, heck, Pedro Vite, right? Like, someone, all the on-ball school skills, played at that Libertadores level, played for a big club in Ecuador. You know, he comes here, he had to figure out so much in terms of what are some of the measurables he's doing off ball running, off ball defending. Even on the ball, he had the talent to make great plays, but sometimes you need to make the right decisions. Sometimes you don't need to do the spectacular. And just a lot of those, the skills from Badwell, it was impressive to see. Sometimes lots of talented young players, it takes some time for him to get that. And he's shown a good polish for his age, and hopefully he can keep that up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a general comment, these preseason training camps, Karifa Yao had a great preseason last year, and it didn't turn out to be anything, right? But look at Ali Ahmed the last couple of seasons, and he always flashed and stood out in some of the preseason stuff, and it really helped springboard him from Whitecaps FC 2 prospect to the player he is now. So, you know, I think if you're a young player, these are great opportunities if they're used in the right way. You know, if you're ready for the challenge, it can serve as a springboard to take that next step forward. So hopefully for Badwal, this will be a springboard to become a real fixture at the next pro level this season. And I mean, the same goes for all these guys. As I mentioned, the ones that were signed to next pro deals at the deadline back in the fall, hopefully they can get that similar kind of experience. And, you know, hopefully it's not just, last season it was kind of the Coupland and Habibullah show a little bit at the next pro level. Hopefully we're obviously going to see some different stuff this season without Habibullah in the fold, but some more impact contributors on the defensive line in central midfield would be a welcome sight, I think. So looking forward to that as well as the first team action. Alex, any final thoughts here? We made a good amount of chatter out of not too much Whitecaps news, but obviously as the preseason news ramp up, there's going to be more and more to talk about, and we'll endeavor to dive into all of that.
Yeah, and honestly, I think we also kept our promise of keeping this relatively short. So I think that's a good place to end with a bit of a look at the future. Of course, what I'll be interested to see is the preseason games start to ramp up, you know, all the latest transfer moves, rumors, dealings, etc. on the Whitecaps. And all of a sudden, quietly, like otherwise, Forge and Cavalry in the CPL, they started preseason with them, of course, being in Champions Cup. But I saw today on Twitter that York United is back. So that, you know, all of a sudden, I know Vancouver FC, some of their new signings have already started to do some individual training, you know, like of a Ben Fisk, which again, shout out, by the way, former Vancouver Whitecap, former Pacific FC man, local Vancouver, native Ben Fisk signing for Vancouver FC. Sounds like a lot of the CPL teams are really going to start preseason as February near. So again, we're going to have a lot to keep an eye out. So excited as all that comes around, even if for now it's kind of the calm before the storm, right? It's especially this weird time where the Whitecaps are in full preseason, but they're a whole continent away. So you kind of, you know what's going on, but you don't know what's going on, you know, like you kind of know what you see and what you hear, but it doesn't tell you what kind of formations are being worked on and et cetera. So excited to see all this kind of continue to come to a head of a Champions Cup game that is so much sooner than I continue to realize and have to start preparing for and make the right calls so that I'm able to attend and stay overnight in. But that's further down the road. It's really on that note. You can find me on Twitter, Alex Gongerizik, on Instagram, Threads, at AGR on the case, where we'll continue to follow all those stories. And I'll throw it to Sam to close off a great episode 189.
Yeah, just on the Vancouver FC note, wanted to give a shout out to David Norman Jr. as well, former Whitecaps Academy product. Sounds like he'll be with the Eagles this upcoming season. So some local content back in the fold. Those guys will be fun to watch, I think. So looking forward to more developments on the CPL front, whether that's Pacific or Vancouver FC as we get closer to their seasons. You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Robot on Twitter, at thirdsub.ca. If you want to break down a Fafa Pico, you want some potential Whitecaps striker targets, Caleb, you know, in his standard analytical style, did a dive into all of that good stuff, Coffee with the Caps, and more preseason content coming at you soon. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll chat again soon.